The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday! And I'm glad we could all meet again for another special episode of Your Welcome. I'll tell you, I've been on the grind. I left home I was on the road for about 11 or 12 days. I went out to Vegas for Conor Khabib, saw that fight, and I went straight the very next day to New York. I did my preparation. We had some media rounds and had the weigh-in and the press conference and blah, blah, blah. Then I had the fight with Fedor. So let's fast forward. I feel like I haven't talked to you guys. I have missed you all. And even though we have not missed a podcast, I do think it's fair to say we were a little bit rushed. I was doing them from a hotel room. So I'm back in Portland, back in the studio. So let's breathe a little bit. And let me tell you all, let's start with my fight. I feel like the Khabib and Conor is a little bit played out at this point, though it does feel like the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, the repercussions of this, the drama that has built. I don't know if we're going to be through this, guys, for the next couple of months. The commission set a hearing to bring Khabib and Conor in, which is soon. I think they set a hearing just for these two guys. I want to say that's coming up, you know, in the next couple of days, somewhere this month. So my point to you is, even though that fight is done, we're still going to be talking about it because there's still stuff happening from that. So let's move on from that and let me get to my own personal experience. I had a very good time in New York. There was all sorts of things going on because Bellator was doing back-to-back shows. So you got Mitrione and Bader fighting on Friday night. And the way I took that in, so they're fighting Friday night and we're on the East Coast, so they're a few hours ahead. I want to say this fight went off at like midnight. So I'm in bed because I got to fight the next day, but I was interested in that match. I knew there was really no way to avoid it. I was going to be hearing about it and getting asked questions about it, you know, if I was to beat Fedor. So I had my iPhone next to me. I had it on the charger, and I turned the fight on and went to bed, closed my eyes and lay there, and I just listened to it. I didn't see it, but so I knew what had happened, and I knew that, Bader had got to position and controlled Mitrione and beat him. So I get up the next day for my own fight, and took in the show, got there to the arena. Again, we're 3 hours ahead. I want to say I left the locker room at around 11 p.m., which works for me. That could drive some guys crazy. That might sound terrible to you guys to have to go to work at 11 p.m., but I'm a night owl. So, I mean, my body's feeling good right then. So I had a good warm-up, go out there to the fight, come across the ring, and the game plan wasn't anything too sophisticated. I just wanted to get in his chest. I wanted to be right in his face the whole time, get my hands on him, wear on him, get him tired, and go from there and see what's going to happen. Guys, he hit me so hard, it was like a missile. I keep calling it a missile. I got hit with a missile, and I'm going down to the mat. Right? I think it might have been like a two-punch, boom, boom. And I'm falling down to the mat. And I'm thinking, yeah, this would be a good time to call it a night, but I'm not going out as the fastest knockout in Bellator history. I remember actually thinking that, and I was out of it. I never really recovered from that moment. But he stepped back. He wanted to go on the feet. So he gave me that, you know, second, 2 seconds to stand back up, which I can tell you, in the middle of a firefight is an eternity. I had a coach, Roy Pittman, used to explain this. He used to explain a millisecond to us when we were young kids. And he'd say, you can't lose your focus, not even for half a second. And he'd say, half a second's too long. He'd say, if you don't think half a second is a long time, go home, turn your stove on until it gets red hot, and then set your cheek on there for half a second and come back and tell me that wasn't a long time. The point I'm trying to offer for you guys is when he gives me about 2 seconds to get up, that's a long time in that kind of an atmosphere. So, all right, I'm hanging in there. I'm sticking to him. I'm coming forward. I'm coming right back at him, and now I'm mad. Now I want to get him back. I just want to find him one time. He had a missile for me, but I'm thinking the whole time, yeah, I got one locked and loaded for you too, and here I'm coming. I go down again. So old Chael gets up again. I'm coming, and now I still got one locked and loaded for him. And I know I'm going to find you sooner or later. This happened. I don't know how many times this happened, but it kept happening. Every time I got up, I'm going back down. So the first round, I knew the first round was burned. I got on top of him at one point. I took him down, pushed him in the cage, got a double, picked him up, put him down. And I'm on top of him thinking, all right, how much energy do I want to use here? This round is burned. I'm not getting this back. But I can win the next two. I can win this fight. This is going through my head. He explodes. Next thing I know, I'm on bottom and he's on top of me. So it was just a melee. I guess that's what I'm telling you for anybody that didn't see the fight, or if you did see it and you just wanted my perspective from being in there. It felt like a dog fight. For me. I don't know what it felt like for him, but I was hurt early on. I was down 5 seconds in. So I'm playing catch up. I'm just trying to survive. I don't know how much time's left. I don't know what round we're in. But I did feel as though a little bit of my philosophy going in was accurate. I did feel as though I was wearing on him. I did feel that he was getting a little bit fatigued, even just from his offense. You know, tired from coming after me, however you want to say it. And in the final spot of the fight, he was punching me. I was down and he was on top and he was punching me. And I remember thinking in my head, oh, this is a good spot for me. As silly as that may sound, but I'll just share with you what I was thinking. You can tease me afterwards. But I was thinking, this is a good spot for me. He's punching himself out. He was hitting me right in my arms, and I could feel the punches were slowing down a little bit, and the power was coming off of him a little bit, and he was breathing pretty hard. And I remember thinking, okay, again, this round is burned, but he's hitting my hands, and he's getting tired here. The other side of that is the referee warned me, fair and square. The ref said, Chael, if you don't move, I'm getting you out of here. I just remember thinking, no, you won't. He's punching me in the arms. You're not going to stop this fight. At any rate, miscalculation. Old Chael came in second. And that's really all I have to share for you. I mean, that really was my perspective of the fight. And that's the quick version. But I'll tell you, I'm not very good at recapping my own matches. And I don't rewatch them. When they're done, I don't rewatch them. I don't get overly nervous before a fight. You feel something. You got some anxiety. You got some kind of emotion. But I control that pretty well after these... You know, after all the years, all the experience I've had in there, I control that pretty well. After the fact, for some reason, I cannot rewatch the fight. My palms will start to sweat. That makes me more nervous than anything. Makes my stomach sick. Win or lose, I don't rewatch them. So I gave you my level best recap, and if anybody watched it and goes, well, you know, Chael didn't quite tell that the way it happened, forgive me. That's the way I remember it happening. And I will fully admit to you a instant revisionist history from my own matches. You don't totally remember what happened out there. You can remember some emotions. You can remember maybe something you heard your coaches yell. You don't hear the crowd much. You don't see the crowd much. It's just you and that guy, and it happens very fast. Fedor, I felt, was a very, very fast guy. And the reason I think that, I never saw those punches come. I never saw those missiles come. And I had a couple of problems. One, I think he was probably pretty quick. I think that assessment's fair. When I would watch his fights, I always thought he was fast, but I always questioned, is he fast or is he fast for a heavyweight? And there's a big difference. And I thought that I would have the speed advantage on him. I never saw his punches. I never saw a flinch. I never saw a setup. They were all power shots. There was no jab. There was no measuring the range. There was no seeing where he was at. It was just boom, boom. He was looking for the kill with everything. So it was a little bit of a hard situation in that regard. And the other side of it was he didn't keep his hands where a normal fighter keeps them. He keeps his hands down. His face is exposed. Risky game. Very risky game he plays. It's cost him before because of that, but the other side of that coin is it just makes it hard to see. I talked to Mitrione before the fight. Mitrione told me he had that same problem with him. He said, you know, he was really quick, but his hands weren't where they were supposed to be. So it just made it difficult to see, and it gave a good advantage to him in that regard, and he got to me. And that was really it. I got up, I walked out, and I came home, and here I am. So ta-da. But if we were to recap the and I'm sorry I can't give you a better recap of the fight than that. It was, you know, it was less than a 5 minute fight, so I'm doing my level best here. But I just remember trying to stay on him, trying to get my hands on him, and I really felt there was opportunity there. And as I look forward to him and Bader, and I do look forward to that match, I tend to find myself thinking Bader is going to be able to get to him. And another piece of the psychology: whenever a guy cleans you up, fighters are very common to then pick that guy in his next fight. It just always seems better if the guy that beat you can go on and beat his next guy. So I don't know that I have a preference in who wins that fight. I'll let them go figure it out. I can just tell you from my experience in there, it seemed to me if Bader could get through the punch, I felt like if I could have got through the punches and got my hands on him, I could have got him to some spots where I wanted. So I think that's the same thing that Bader's up against. I don't think that's rocket science to come to that conclusion. And the question will become, can Bader get get through some of those hands that are going to come at him early to grab a hold of him and start to be able to control him and control some positions. So we'll let those guys figure that out. Not the most captivating matchup, in my opinion, for whatever reason. I love the tournament. I love that I got to be part of the tournament. I love that it was a straight line bracket. I love that the politics were out. I don't know how that is for business. I don't know if that's good for a promoter. I could just tell you as a competitor, it was great. It was a great way to do things. It took the politics out. It took the hype and some of the things that guys feel that they have to go out and do, where they're, I call it manufacturing conflict. You don't do any of that. It's a straight line bracket. You fight whoever shows up and whoever advances. So my time in the tournament is done, but the tournament will continue, and I do look forward to that. I think both those guys can beat the other one. I think Fedor could knock Bader out. I think Bader could grind him out. So I think there's something to see there. There, at least there is for me as a fan. Guys, I've been hanging upside down lately. Strange, yes, but hear me out. It's called inversion therapy, which uses gravity and your own body's weight to decompress your spine and release tension in your shoulders, neck, and joints. Decompressing on my teeter hanger for a few minutes a day, it's been great. It's been a great addition to my routine. It's helping me to maintain a healthy spine and stay active without the pain. It's been tremendous for my post-workout recovery. Over 3 million people have put their trust in Teeter, recognized as the best-known name in inversion tables since 1981 and the only inversion table brand that has been both safety-certified by the UL Laboratories and FDA registered as a Class 1 medical device. And check this out. For a limited time, for listeners of this show only, you can get a brand new 2019 Teeter Fit Spine Inversion Table model with bonus accessories, including a lumbar bridge and a neck pillow. Plus, you will get a free pair of gravity boots so you can invert at home or take the boots with you to the gym. This deal is $150 worth of savings, and it's available at teeter.com/sunnen. You'll also get free shipping and free returns if for any reason you don't like it, and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's absolutely no risk to try it out. Remember, you can get the new 2019 Teeter Fit Spine Inversion Table, all the accessories, plus a free pair of gravity boots and free shipping by going to teeter.com/sunnen. That's teeter.com/sunnen. Check it out. So many other things were happening in MMA. I mean, Eddie Alvarez signs with 1FC. Did anybody see that coming? I did not know that they were even at the table, and a lot of you guys won't even know what 1FC is. 1FC is a very good, from what I've seen, promotion that's taking place in Asia. They even have a television deal over there. You know, we got our Tuesday night fights or Friday night fights here in America for boxing. Usually MMA from one of the companies on some network every single weekend. I guess they have something like that over there, and they're a very big deal. They'll sell out arenas of 10,000, 12,000 people. I would get up three times a year, about 3 a.m, every time Ben Askren was fighting, and there was always some link online. You could go to Flow, they were carrying it, or sometimes you just have to do a Google search. But I'd log in and I would watch 1FC, and I would notice incredible production, incredible crowd for that part of the world. The reason I keep bringing up for that part of the world, they haven't made a strong presence in North America, and I don't know if they're getting ready to. But the fact that they're signing a guy like Eddie Alvarez, who had multiple suitors, which means Eddie did great, got in a bidding war, which is exactly where anybody in business would want to be, and ultimately they came out on top, made me think, okay, are these guys about to break into North America in some capacity? Whether it's for live shows, whether it's for streaming, do they have a television deal? What are these guys working on? I'd love to know the business side. I know you guys love to see the fights, but I love to see how the office is working. I love to see the plays that are being made. So when they signed Eddie, it signaled to me that they're getting ready to try to make some kind of a splash in North America. And I can't confirm that to you guys at all. But I was happy for Eddie. I was happy for them. I think it's a great show. It's definitely a great pickup, and we'll see where all that goes and who his matches are. It takes away a little from the 155-pound division, which I think is my favorite division right now. I think 155 pounds, I think that's the premier class for me. They just signed, by example, going to be Fox. I think it might be the last ever Fox / UFC show left on the deal. They're going to do Ally Aquina versus Kevin Lee. Those guys fought before. You know, I'm not sure a lot of you guys know the story on that, but the first time we ever had Kevin Lee on this show, all he did is talk about how bad he wanted to fight Ally Aquina. I'm going, where is this coming from? But they had fought on like an undercard, and Al beat him. I think Al stopped him. And Kevin was pissed. Kevin never let it go. So now he's made his way up. Kevin fights exclusively main events for the last couple of years. Al made more than just a splash in the business with his main event performance for the world championship on less than 30 hours notice against Khabib. So all of a sudden, these guys are going to rematch, right? The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Kevin kept asking for the fight. Kevin got the fight. I want to see that. But, you know, as you look at the whole division, you know, that's where you got the Gaethjes. That's where you got the Poiriers. That's where you got the Nate Diaz coming back. That's where you got the Khabibs and you got the Conors. I mean, that weight class right now for me, I think that's my favorite weight. I like the matchup there. I like matchups there. I like the possibilities there. I don't know what's going on with Poirier's injury. He's out of the Diaz fight. I suppose that's also broken since perhaps we talked last, at least since I've been home in Portland. Of course, we covered the fact that DC is going to be stepping in with Derek Lewis. I like that match. And it makes you kind of wonder, too, where are things going to go for Daniel Cormier? If you were to take Daniel Cormier at his word, and like anything in life, that's what we have to do. We have to operate on the information we're given. Daniel Cormier is pretty dead set, for whatever reason, that he's going to do two more fights. I just don't believe him. I don't believe him because, and I'll tell you why, I don't think he's going to count the Derek Lewis fight. When Daniel said he had two fights left, one of them was to include Brock Lesnar, and then one of them was going to be the swan song with whoever that was going to be. Was it going to be a rematch with Stipe? Was it going to be against whoever the number one contender is at that time? Is it going to be against John Jones? I don't know. And Daniel didn't say. He just said, I'm going to do two more fights. Brock's going to be one of them. Let the UFC figure out who the other one is. Thanks for everything and goodbye. I just don't know if I buy that because there are mega fights out there for him right now. Not all of his fights have been mega fights. As much as you may have enjoyed the Rumble Johnson fight, and it was perfectly fine fight, but it wasn't a mega fight as much as you may have enjoyed the Stipe fight and what we thought was going to be a mega fight, but that's only something you know when you Monday morning quarterback it after the fact. It turned out not to be a mega fight for whatever reason. I think we can all agree that the Brock fight is going to be a big fight, and we may not think it's going to be an ultra competitive fight or a hard fight for Daniel. That's a separate conversation. I'm talking about a big fight. I'm talking about eyeballs. I'm talking about a guy that wants to be able to move on from the sport, to set up his feet. Yeah, I'm talking about money. Sure I am. But with that said, we know for sure, without any bit of a hint or a gamble, that John Jones versus Daniel Cormier does huge business. We know that because it's done huge business twice, and those guys got a legitimate beef. And if you put it at heavyweight, you add that added dimension. That added dimension of intrigue to what could happen here. Why Daniel is saying that I have put John out of my sights, while he is saying that, and I think that he means that to a degree, I have to say to you guys, and I think you would agree with me, those are the two big fights. And for him to leave the sport without grabbing the two big fights, while they're here, don't forget this, he fought Gustafson. Look how hard that fight was. That wasn't a great night of business. He's had other fights. They're hard. He trains. He weighs in, he goes through the process, he goes out, but they're not huge fights. I just don't think, and all I can do is put myself in his shoes. What would I do if I was in his position? Well, if I did all this heavy lifting and I had two mega fights out there that I could get back to back in the form of Brock Lesnar and John Jones, I'm going to go do the mega fights. And I think that's what he'll do. I don't think he will count Derek Lewis. The reason I bring this up is it seems to be a hot topic and people seem to keep talking about it. But I don't think that it's going to count against him.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
The Lakers are officially here on the official Lakers podcast on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join Emmy Award-winning sports reporter Susie Schuster and co-host Aaron Larsoul as they discuss the Lakers' news of the day and break down the upcoming season with some of the biggest guests around, including Shaq, Magic, and the new king of L.A., LeBron James. Check out the official Lakers podcast every week on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
If you're looking for the absolute best gear when it comes to competing, training, and recovery, Under Armour has created the best performing gear to make you better. Guys, they've got two new collections, Vanish and Perpetual. Under Armour is ready to help you focus on performance and take your fitness game to the next level. The Vanish collection is engineered to be more breathable, so you feel lighter and less distracted. It's lightweight, quick drying material. It won't cling or chafe, and it stretches without absorbing sweat. If you're looking for something more dynamic, the Perpetual collection offers unique design and details to help improve the way your body moves, as well as print taping. It hugs and flexes for better alignment and muscle awareness. And right now, Under Armour also has the best fitness app to help you track and learn how to put that gear to the test. Track your runs and log workouts with Under Armour's MyMap Run, which you can sync to other devices, including Garmin, Apple Watch, and even one of Under Armour's connected running shoes. Then track your diet with Under Armour's MyFitnessPal, the fastest, easiest to use calorie counter app where you can set calorie and nutrition standards. Download Under Armour's Map My Run and MyFitnessPal in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and take control of your goals today.
Now back to your welcome with Chael Sonnen.
And I'll tell you this too on the Daniel front, and I don't know if he would agree with me on this or that if he's even aware of this, but there is certainly a piece of him, okay? I share this with you as an athlete, but there is certainly a piece of him that would very much want to get the win back and go out on top over John Jones. Obviously, I'm stating the obvious for you, but the other side of that coin that may not be so obvious is there is a piece of an athlete, no matter how much of a competitor he is, and no matter how much, if he's even recognized it himself, does have a thought somewhere in his head, do I want to run the risk of going 0-3 against a guy? And so you have this struggle, this internal struggle, whether you're conscious of it or not, fight or flight, that can help to conduct and influence some of those decisions. Where I am going with that theory, if I am correct and there is a piece of data that's going, you know what, why go out there and do it? He screwed up and he's got the asterisks and I've moved on. I'm in a different division. I'm champion of the world. He could change his mind after seeing John in a performance. For John Jones to get past Alexander Gustafsson is going to be a very tall order. The John Jones that we're going to see against Alexander Gustafsson has a question mark about it. For the same reason that Barry Bonds quit hitting those home runs. I have seen a clean John Jones. He is one scary son of a bitch. The guy is very, very good. And that was the John that fought OSP. But why I offer that to you is it was a reduced John Jones. As good as he was, and leaving there with a championship and winning all five rounds and winning the striking and the grappling and the everything that he did right, it was still a reduced John Jones. So now when you're confronted with that we are going to see a reduced John Jones in comparison to the John that we saw fight Gustafsson, if that math holds up, and you put that in conjunction with the fact that John refused to fight Gustafsson on November 3rd because he was not ready, what else does that tell us? Well, that's a big clue. That tells us he's not training. So you get a guy that's coming off of this suspension, which is going to cause a reduction. You have a guy that's a little bit older, though I don't think he's even far from too old for this sport. Okay, and that's relevant because there is an age range where when you take breaks, it can cost you greatly. But there's also age ranges where you can take a break. Your body doesn't know any different. You're just that right age where you don't put on a lot of weight. You don't lose your rhythm. You don't get out of timing. That comes with some youth. And I think he's still in that spot. So I don't think that him being a year older is going to hurt, but I will also concede it's not going to help. And then when you're confronted with the clue that he wasn't training and had to say no to a fight in his home state on top of the bill in MSG, when it's a world title, I mean, that's a big piece of evidence that you have to take into consideration. It's still a very special athlete, and that is not my message, but I think the fight gets a little bit more compelling, and I think based on the performance of John in that fight, may influence Daniel's decision of whether, hey, I'm going to welcome him up to heavyweight and do this thing one more time. And I don't know if Daniel would agree with me. I don't know that he is conscious of that. And I would not blame him if he was not. I'm just sharing with you that at some point, your mind does go to that place. Do I want to go out there and risk going 0-3? Do I want to see this guy fight one more time? And then it is outcome-based too, isn't it? As much as you guys want to see Jones and Cormier, and as much as we think that that is the fight to make, if Jones is to come up short at light heavyweight and not beat Gus, Jones's next piece of business will be a trilogy against Gus. Imagine how much you would want to see that if they go out and they have another wonderful fight like the first one was, but the decision goes the other way. Well, now you want to run that one back, and all of a sudden Daniel's left without a dance partner. But that's how quick MMA can work. That's the way it goes. Nothing wrong with it. You just don't know what you know until you know it. There's a lot of unforeseens out there. You never know when a guy's going to fly over a cage and throw a jumping crane kick into the audience, and all of a sudden you want to see a rematch. I mean, you just don't know. You just simply don't know. So Daniel's going to take on Derek Lewis, and my only opinion of that fight is just to call it early, that one is not going to count in the tally column against Daniel when he says, I'm going to do two more fights. I don't think so. I think you're for sure going to get him in this fight, and then I think we start the clock and we see who those two next opponents are. You all like saving money, right? Maybe a few bucks at the supermarket. Maybe you save some money at the department store. There are so many opportunities to be smart and save that cash. Well, how about saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance? And the best part is you can do it right from home. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today. You know, I'll tell you one thing, too. To go back and just put a bow on this real fast. When you're looking at the Conor and Khabib, okay, Conor is in a tough spot, and it's only a tough spot because it is a unique spot. And it's a unique spot that should not have been created, and what I'm talking about is Conor would like to rematch Khabib from everything that we've been told. It's very easy for us to believe that that is the case because that's what Conor's history is, right? He loses to Nate Diaz, boom, he wants to do it again. Nobody before, nobody in between. This guy next, same weight, same round, same venue. Let's do this one again. So it's very easy for us to believe that that is how Conor's mind works because we've seen it before. Okay, great. Well, Conor's going to get his way. Sure he is. It's a business. Conor is the money fight. Of course he's going to get his way. Everyone wants to fight Conor. They're begging to fight Conor because it's a business. That's where the money's going to be at. So we could see where Khabib would want to get right back in there. Khabib also appears to have unsettled business with Conor. So Conor's going to get his way. Well, not so fast. For reasons unknown, and for guys who have a different form of commodity other than money, which is very rare when you are in prize fighting or any level of business, Khabib appears that he does not want to do that fight. Now, the reason that is interesting isn't because Khabib, like some guys, is being a scumbag and is looking for easier fights. He's not doing that at all. In fact, he's calling out Tony Ferguson. He's just going, look, Tony's the guy. I was supposed to fight Tony before a couple of times. Tony got his title stripped. Tony just beat Pettis. I just beat Conor. I'm the champion, and he's the number one contender. This is the guy I'm going to fight. Well, that's compelling. I mean, on one hand, that's a breath of fresh air, whether that's the bigger fight that you want to see or not. That's subsequent to the topic at hand, which is, that's a breath of fresh air. You've got the champion calling out the hardest fight he can possibly find in the form of the number one contender who used to be the champion by the name of Tony Ferguson. Where that gets interesting for Conor is now you're in left field wearing a catcher's mitt going, wait a minute, I'm the boss. I've always been the boss. I can have any fight I want. I can choose fights. I can pick. Everybody's coming to me. The promoter's coming to me. The media partners are coming to me. The fans are ready to hear what I want to do. And every athlete from three different weight classes is looking at me, including a retired former two-division champion named George St. Pierre who wants it. Everybody wants a piece of me. What do you mean? What do you mean Khabib doesn't want to fight me and doesn't want the money and doesn't want the accolade? And on top of that, Khabib should have a pretty good head of confidence because he just beat me. So what do you mean he doesn't want to do this again? He wants to go fight Tony for less money in arguably a harder fight. What do you mean? Logic is against this decision. It's still Khabib's decision. It's still where he's at least today, on the information that we're given. it's very hard to push back on that when the champion is calling out the number one contender. The champion in Khabib is also saying, I don't care about the money. Telling the commission, keep it all. Don't even worry about the fine. Keep it all. Whether that's gamesmanship or not, as long as the other side believes it, it's now going to work. It's now a little bit more than a bluff. It's now where everybody's sitting back and going, has Khabib lost his mind? This is prize fighting. Go fight for the biggest prize. And Khabib goes, I don't care about that. Well, you're in a tough spot. I don't even know how to give a prediction on that. What are you going to do? Tell Khabib no? You're the world champion and we're not going to put you with the number one contender because that doesn't make sense to do? He's the number one contender. It's a very unique spot. And it's a unique spot for Conor. And all the cards, if you're following logic and capitalism, appear to be on Conor's side. But for some reason, he's still getting an adverse answer to the one he wants, which is interesting. So what does he do? What does the promotion do? Go do Khabib and Tony? Wait to see what happens to bring Conor back? Try to talk Conor into a Diaz. All of a sudden, Diaz's dance card just became open. When does Conor want to fight? Does he want to do this sooner? Does he want to do this later? Can you get Conor to move? Conor may not budge. He didn't when it came to Diaz the second time. Conor didn't budge. Said, I want Diaz. I want him at the same weight class. I want him in fire. I want everything to be the exact same all the way down to the arena. Okay. And he would not budge. Okay. So what does he do? It's a very tough spot. And it's a very interesting spot when you look at it from a negotiating standpoint. I would never encourage you in business or in life to be careless. But I would always encourage you to care less in every single negotiation. It does not matter if it's business or even if it's a relationship. One side is going to care more than the other. And the side that cares more has the disadvantage. And the side that cares less has the strength. That is a reality. So when Khabib comes out and is making it very clear that he does not care, he does not care what happens. I mean, he's even said, I'm going to fight one more time. It's going to be Tony and I'm going to retire from the sport. Maybe he will. I don't know. He beats to a different drum, but there is something about that, whether it's sincere or gamesmanship. And frankly, I take it as sincere, but either side, there's something very powerful about it. When you guys are learning the art of war, there's only a couple of things you need to know. First off, the best general never fires a shot. And second off, if you never want to actually have to go to war, you just want to know the art of war, you must have a weapon that the other side knows that they cannot defeat. But secondly, and they have to work hand in hand, and you must have both, you must convince the other side that you were willing to use that weapon. The other side must believe that you will push the button. If you can work those two things together, you will have the art of war and you won't have to go to battle. Khabib has succeeded in the art of war of making us all believe that with his power, and the power is that 12-pound gold belt that can hold up an entire division, and he also represents one half of, I would say, the biggest fight you could possibly put on in the sport right now, which would be a rematch between Khabib and Conor. When he represents that, and lets the other side know that he's willing to use it, which is the eject button in this case, which is the retirement button, which is the go fight somebody that is not named Conor button. It's very fascinating, and it creates a tremendous amount of power. And I don't know how this will play out. I don't know. But it seems as though with the two minds of Conor and the needle-moving draw ability that he has versus Khabib, with the disciplined stance on principle, an undefeated record, and a 12-pound gold belt, it seems like you have two very immovable objects that history says come together. History says this should be an easy one. This should be a slam dunk. Because after all, this is a prize fight. And whether you like the guy you're standing across from or not, whether you trust the son of a bitch you're standing across from or not, like it or not, you are partners. If even for a night, if even to never speak again, if even in a tumultuous relationship that you do not wish for on your own, you are partners with him. And partners in business set out to make money. So when Khabib comes in with a stance of, no, I'm not going to work with my best partner, I'm going to go out and do just a harder fight with just as hard of a weight cut, with just as much to risk, which is prestige and a title and a championship and a legacy and a record. And I fully understand that for this tremendous risk, I am going to be compensated less. And I don't care because I stand on principle and this is what I want to do. When he goes out and does that, I'm just fascinated by it. We've really never seen this kind of a spot before. We've really never seen somebody in this kind of predicament. And what do you do? How do you punish a guy? You know, we're a little bit of ahead of ourselves because when you do speak of punishments, right now it's not totally up to Khabib. The funniest thing that had happened in that entire fight with Khabib and Conor, from an actual point of humor, of laughing out loud, and there was some very serious stuff there, but there was one piece where I about fell out of my chair, is when Khabib jumps over the fence, causes a melee, attacks Dylan Danis, his own guys go in the crowd. It's so bad they can't even put the belt around. They can't even make the announcement to the crowd. It's such a terrible spot. He shows up to the press conference and says, why you guys still talk about this? I jump over the cage. Why you still talk about this? The reason it was so funny is because he included the word still. Why are you still talking about it? I'm looking at my watch going, Khabib, that was 8 minutes ago. That just happened. Why are we still talking about it? Why are you still talking about it? I jump over the cage. Why you still talk about this? It was so funny. Some things were even forgiven, right? Humor solves everything. But he does, the reality, aside from the humorous spot of it, is he has to go before the commission. Until we get that result, it's very tough to make any kind of predicaments on, is he going to be fighting Tony like he says he wants to do? Are they going to be able to do the Conor thing like they say they want to do and Conor says he wants to do? Is it going to be none of the above? And that's the elephant in the room that nobody's discussing. Khabib is going to sit. They are going to come down on him. Does that mean he sits for 6 months or does that mean he sits for 12? They may choose that it's six, that it's less time, send him back in there and take 40% instead of 20, take 30% instead of 10, right? They have two ways to punish him right now. And they may just say, listen, we have such a big nut in this $2 million purse that we have upheld that we can just punish him financially, do the sanction that away, and then make him go out there and work. And that would be fair. That would be one way to do it. I just tend to think they're going to do both. I think they're going to grab some money and make him sit. But let's see what happens. I don't come to you with any more than a bit of a guess on that. And it would probably likely be a bigger punishment to just do the financial side. I mean, they do have a obligation to commerce. A commission does. So you do want to get the guy back in there, get him back working, taking your 6%. Why punish everybody? What the hell did UFC do wrong? What did the commission do wrong? They didn't do anything. So don't punish yourself. Bring the guy back. Take some of his purse. Bring him back. Let him go out and do business again. Let's see where all of that goes. But when you do the Conor and Khabib talk, as fascinating as it is to look at the two polar opposite sides of this, of yes, I want to do it, versus, yeah, well, too bad, I'm not going to let you, which is a unique spot for Conor McGregor. Very unique spot. He's got to be looking left and looking right and going, what? What are you talking about? You don't call the shots here. The guy that brings in the money calls the shots. I bring in the money. I call the shots. Khabib says, yeah, keep your money. Shove it up your ass. Bring out Tony or whoever the number one contender is. Just an interesting spot. Haven't seen it played out like this before. Defies logic. But before you even get to that, you got to get through the bureaucracy, which is the commission. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for. But do you know what it actually means? And the same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Let me introduce you to True Price from True Car. Right now, you will know exactly what you're going to pay for the car you want. That includes fees and accessories. Before you even get to the dealership, and True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if the true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this. So they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy new or used, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, guys. Thank you for the recap. Thank you all for being here, even though I've had it with you. Cannot stand you anymore, but I'll be back on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. Thanks for listening, guys. You are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You've seen him in the hit movie Night School with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish. But you can hear Rob Riggle every week on the funniest sportscast around with co-host Sarah Tiana.
The way it usually works is you do the script as written, because that's what the studio paid for. Then you do another take, same thing, only with notes. Then on the third pass, they'll come back and say, okay, anybody got a thought? Yeah, can I try this? No. Can I try this? No. Moving on.
Check out Riggle's Picks every Thursday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.